K-Mud Podcast presents.
You've got K-Mud's The Cannabis Show, K-Mud Community Radio, The Cannabis Show, and this is your host, Steve Dodge, and Sunshine Sarasota is right here next to me. Should be a good show, so tune in. We're going to be talking with Scott Harris from Earl Hill. He's an extractor, and we're going to be talking about extractions, which is something that I honestly don't know a whole lot about and want to know more about. You know, we've talked on the show about diversifying, and certainly extractions is something that allows you to diversify. And I believe low-level extractions like cold, like water hash, what's it called?
Yeah, that's actually reminding me of some hash that I saw on Saturday when I was down at Area 101 in Laytonville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I saw this hash that was made in Spain. Wish I could remember the name of that strain, too, off the top of my head. But that was pretty cool. Anyway, just checking it out.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm always kind of trying to think of things that the farmer can do without involving anybody else. And as long as – you probably all know that. But as long as you're not using solvents that kind of processing, then you're a go. I'm an old hash guy, but I don't do much hash anymore or extractions either because they just get me too loopy. I'm so light duty nowadays. But I believe that Dorothy is going to be getting Scott in the studio in a few minutes, and we'll hear what he has to say. Anyway, I saw you rushing into the studio. Is everything good with you?
Everything's great. Everything's great. I was just eating a little snack and eating it up to the last minute.
Oh, well, that's okay. Oh, I just saw Javi has come in, and he's going to be with us. Dorothy is always there for us at this time of night, and our guest is being called right now. Something I would like to announce, though, brand new. Beth, my sweetie, is a quilter, and she's put together a magnificent quilt that I just brought into the studio and handed over to Dorothy. We're hoping to get pictures of it, maybe get it up on the web so you can see it. It's big. It covers
a
full bed.
Like a donation to K-Mud?
And it would be, yeah, she donated it to K-Mud.
Wow. Well, thank you, Beth. That's awesome.
Yeah, the quilt itself has got to be worth at least $3,000. Nope. We're hoping that you out there, our listeners, that you'll be taken by it and you'll make a great donation to get your hands on it.
What are some of the colors on there?
Well, you know, often the back of a quilt is just it, and its back is pretty.
So, yeah.
But
what are the main colors?
The quilt itself is mainly black and white with red highlights, and it's a huge spiral.
Okay.
You know, kind of like those kind of spiral you have when you're going into a dream or something.
Perfect.
And there's an immense amount of small tat work, you know, the kind of thing that if you're stepping back, you can't quite see it. But if you step forward, then you see the complexity of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Okay, we've got our guest. Let's get him in. Hey, Scott.
Yes. Hello.
Hey Scott. Welcome.
Welcome
to the studio. I don't know if you've met Sunshine. She's my co-host,
Hello.
Sunshine. And
Hello, Sunshine.
I met Scott Harris. He's from Earl Hill. That's your business name, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. And I met him up at a Humboldt Seed Company when I was up there getting this season's seeds from myself. And we had a little bit of a conversation, and I asked him to come on to the show because I wanted to talk extraction with him. And so then here he is. So to start off, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the business?
Well, You know, I guess I've been in the business most of my life. You know, I started making hash probably 20 years ago or so. You know, I started making bubble hash, you know, originally, and then moved into making butane hash when nobody wanted bubble hash anymore. And I started doing that. And then, you know, started getting back into making the bubble hash again with the whole, you know, wave of rosin coming through.
Sure.
And where are you located at?
Our lab is in Arcata.
Okay. Yeah, great.
In the cannabis zone over there on the West End.
Beautiful.
There's a surprising number of businesses up there with the West End address.
Wait, are you over there by the... Where is it at exactly?
On West End Road in Arcata, where all the cannabis businesses are.
Are you the spot there by the coffee shop?
No, we're not by the coffee shop.
Okay, because they're always got some chirps billowing out of there.
Gee, I wonder if they're doing cannabis there. Who knows?
It's nice, and they got great music.
Our chirps are definitely billowing over there for sure.
Yeah.
So, Scott, from talking with you, I got the impression that you liked blueberry muffin. Tell us why.
It's just a very unique terpene profile. You know, it's very, very fruity. It makes a really good extract. You know, we do all. Live rosin. For that one does better with the butane extraction.
Okay.
It doesn't wash very well, as they say.
It doesn't wash very well. So what is it specifically about the terpenes that you find so attractive with the blueberry muffin? You mentioned it's fruity.
Yeah, it's just like a mouth watering, you know, kind of like fruity flavor, you know. It's unique. I like the unique terpene profiles.
All right. I can't agree with you more. I particularly like your description of mouth-watering, you know.
Yeah.
So since I actually have an extractor here, and, you know, not that many people know extraction or understand how it works, and if you could tell us a little bit about extraction, what it is, and why do you think it is one of the better, if you do think that, one of the better ways to process pot?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different types of extraction. You know, you got, you know, alcohol extraction and butane extraction and ice water extraction and dry sift extraction. And I'm sure there's a list of other ways to, you know, CO2 extraction. You know, so there's a lot of different things you can make out of the extracted product. Not all of it's great. Some of it's not great.
How come?
I mean, I don't know. I like higher quality products, you know, like a distillate. I don't believe is a great product. You know, it's just distilled, you know, THC basically, you know, which is, you know, you have to distill the THC to make distillate, right? So you have to boil it off and then recondense it in, you know, into another vessel or space.
Oh, that doesn't sound, from my narrow point of view, it doesn't sound very natural.
Yeah, you know, and I like the more the fresh extracted cannabis plant, you know, where you're preserving the terpenes, you know, and the flavor of the fresh plant, you know, that's a better product for an extraction, you know. And you know, the two best ways to do that are ice water or butane.
So what are, like, I mean, for farmers out there, and I'm thinking of the one sitting next to me right now, what are some of, like, how do you want your farms to, like, prep it before you come and get it, like, for doing the fresh frozen?
You know, like a wet trim, you know, loosely packed, or, right, you know, in like a sealed bag.
Okay.
You know, like loose in a sealed bag, you know, preserved from getting squished. You know, you don't want it to be like squashed.
Right. And you want to take off a fair amount of leaf, I would imagine.
You want to take off, you know, most of the leaf on there, you know, except, you know,
just extra
the sugar leaf, mm-hmm. you know. And even take off, like, the tips and stuff of, you know, some of that leaf that's there
what
as
about,
well.
What about, too, like, how much, say, what's your tolerance for, like, mold and powdery mildew? Because I know depending on the extraction, you can also remove quite a bit of that.
You know, I used to, you know, think it was okay to maybe do some mold, but I throw all my mold away. Because mm-hmm. I also have a cultivation in Neyland, and, you know, we throw all the mold away.
Right, right. I mean, you're not okay. really going to, yeah, you're just not going to get any yield because the resin and whatnot's, you know, already rotten at that point.
But yeah, it's not gonna be great. You know, it's not gonna be good hash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I got a question for you. I'm telling you, I don't know very much, but I had always thought that with fresh frozen, it was cut right in the field and sort of put in the truck and hauled away. But it sounds like that's not the case. That you're talking about a wet trim prior to it being picked up.
Right.
Yeah.
Could you clarify on that? Because I know that if you take pot, I don't care how you trim it, if it's wet and you stick it in a sack, it's on a suicide mission.
Yeah, you'd have to freeze it pretty quick after.
Yeah, yeah. So it goes into the you know, the flash freeze right away.
Or you'd have to, like, take it fresh right away to the lab and get it into the ice water pretty quick or into whatever extraction you're doing pretty quick.
So is the flash freeze facility, so to speak, right there next to the grow while it's being wet trimmed?
Yeah, so I have, like, a big, you know, Connex box freezer, like a 20-foot box Connex freezer.
Nice.
And I freeze everything, you know, in there on site, and, you know, just put it in there and freeze it, and then I take it to the lab once it's frozen.
Right, gotcha. And when you say wet trim, I'm assuming that it's at minimum bucked.
Yeah, like bucked, kind of like a wet trim, you know, like a loose wet trim.
Okay. Okay.
Not too loose, but, you know, not crazy tight.
Right, because I've always looked at fresh frozen as a way for the farmer to save a little money, you know.
Yes. That was one of the reasons why I got into it, because I just, you know, trimming was a lot, you know, for me to deal with. So I got into doing the live resin, you know, which then I didn't have to trim it anymore, have to deal with a bunch of, you know, trimmers, which is, you know, kind of hard sometimes. And then the live resin holds for a long time, you know, so it has a really long shelf life. That's another reason why I got into doing the fresh frozen.
Yeah, I could easily see that. So is it common for the farmer to have a wet trim crew to make it happen quickly?
Yes, it's very labor intensive doing the fresh frozen harvesting.
Yeah, there's like some like machines you can bring in there to help, like
really?
Yeah, with some of that de-leafing and whatnot to get it ready.
There's fans that a lot of people stick their fingers in and you know, chop the tips of their fingers off, and you know, there's, you know, trim machines that you can use too, but they're a little slow as well.
Yeah, the fan. Yeah, the fan might work the best, I guess.
I do.
I don't really.
Yeah,
I get all the big leaf off by hand mostly.
If you are gonna
just a light touch on the fans.
Yeah,
light touch on the fans.
If you are going to have someone there, like, doing that cutting, someone who has really good eye-hand coordination, like a gamer, they'll just rip through that so fast.
It takes us 6 weeks to get through our harvest at the end of the year.
Okay. Do you take any product from other farmers?
Not yet. I think this might be one of the first years where we might actually get through all of our flour and need to start doing that.
Okay. Well, congratulations on that. Though you haven't done it, what do you think a farmer might expect per pound for a return in price? What would it be worth to a farmer?
I mean, I could hear anything, people wanting, you know, 25 to, 175 for a pound of fresh frozen.
All right.
So the price is all over the place.
Okay. What do you think is a fair price?
Or, I mean, what are some of the determining factors on the pricing? How is it?
A lot of it is how it washes, you know, like how
like
much
yield.
It produces, you know, with the, on, you know, on the rosin side of the extraction thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How many, what strains are you working with?
I mean, just this year, probably close to 50.
Wow.
There's a lot of different ones.
Wow. Okay. And then some of them, like, you pick out, maybe you've got distillation in mind. Maybe you've got live resin in mind. Like, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're, you got.
Some of them are, you know, ones that are supposed to wash, and then, you know, some of them don't wash, and, you know, some of them are, you know, go for live resin. Some of them might, you know, do the rosin. We also grow everything from seed. So it's all seed stock that we're growing.
That's cool.
Why are you picking seed?
It's less maintenance to take care of. It's easier. Don't have to do moms or take clones or or spray the plants, because they're just healthy, vigorous plants and they don't have systemic, you know, fungus or, you know, bugs or anything like that.
So are you just growing them like open field style?
Yeah, just open them, air in the field, yeah.
And then what's the elevation you're at?
I want to say like 1,400 or 1,600.
Okay. So you see that Humboldt, you're like right above the Humboldt high fog.
Yeah.
You know, we're in Neyland, so we get a lot of fog here.
Oh, you are getting the fog bake.
Yeah, really
in the
bad.
Summer, yeah. Yeah.
So having said that, do you have a problem with mold because of the fog?
Well, it all depends on the year. Last year it was, you know, not too much mold at all.
Great.
Interesting. Okay. Sorry we're getting so down and dirty here on the details. But like I said, I personally don't know very much about it. I can see that there's a certain growth process involved for anyone who wants to get into it. Let me ask you another question. It circles around the idea of pure product, the problem perhaps in obtaining pure product. Now, you don't purchase other people's product yet. To a certain extent, I could see how that allows you to focus on having a safe and pure product. I'm going to ask it how you do it, but also, do you actually service folks specifically who have medical needs?
Everything that we do goes on to the, you know, the retail market. And, you know, the recreational retail market.
Okay.
So we're not actually, you know, servicing anybody but the you know, the retail stores. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that that hash and extracts are appropriate for medical needs?
I mean, they can be. I've had, you know, people tell me that, you know, some of the stuff that I've had, the chicken and waffles in particular, that took care of their sciatic pain.
Nice.
I had multiple people tell me the same thing about the same hash.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's people are definitely, you know, seeking it for medicinal benefit.
This is funny that when I was up at Humboldt Seed, I got a bunch of chicken and waffle seed, and I'm going to be growing that as one of my batches. And I've heard nothing but good about it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what it turns out. I think it's kind of a funny name, you know.
People love the name. I like the name. Everybody loves the name.
Yeah, it's a cool name. I agree with that. And so you say chicken and waffles has proven itself to be good for pain.
The sciatic in particular, you know, three different people tell me that it took away their sciatic pain.
Oh, that's so cool.
And that is actually very cool because the sciatic pain is no joke. it can be quite debilitating. So whether it's medical or not, everybody still wants to have what they might call a pure product, an unadulterated experience. It seems like that's one of your goals. And how can you give us some tips on how you go about getting a nice, clean product?
Well, we cultivate all organically, so – the only thing our plants get throughout the season is, you know, we dry amend the soil, you know, and, you know, we till that in, and then they get nothing but water for the rest of the season. And I believe that makes a really clean, you know, product just by, you know, not feeding it a bunch or spraying it with anything.
So tell us about what you do fertilize it with.
So I, you know, get stuff from the amendments from the T-Lab over there in Arcata, and, you know, I'm in the soil with that.
Gotcha.
And then just give them water.
And just give them water. Yeah.
What's your native soil like there?
It's a lot of clay and rock and dirt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shoot. So you had to, like, dig out trenches and put dirt in it? Or could you use some of the native dirt at all?
I have, like, some trenches that I dug out that have soil in them.
Yeah.
And then I have, some other, you know, like, mounds that I mix soil and, like, the native dirt together.
Okay, cool.
And then I have, like, some raised beds.
Yeah, those mounds probably work pretty good.
Yeah, they work great. Last year was the first year with them.
Okay.
They work great.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sweet.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support People Powered Radio at KMUD.org.
I'm going to jump in here for a second and remind our listeners that they've got KMUD Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your host, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. And we're real pleased to have Scott Harris from Earl Hill with us. And we're talking about extraction. And it has made it to the bottom of the hour. And if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, we certainly want to hear from you. And you can get in here to the studio at 923-3911. Javi will get you in here. Now, that's a 707, 923-3911. Javi, do we have a caller? Yes, we do. You're in the studio.
Hello, Steve and Sunshine.
Hey.
How ironic that Sunshine could tell us about a daffodil in the field looking back. I and you are one. We are one. But that's how I called. You guys did so much. I was thinking about the breeding or the processing of marijuana, which is what the show was about. I tuned in a little bit late. Mm-hmm. But what I found out is, I think it's all those, I don't think we need any more studies. I mean, people are, it's in the ether, but the government knew about this. And by the way, this was one of the highest performing plants in the world, tomatoes, peppers, everything. I mean, we're talking, this plant has outproduced everybody. But my point was about processing and everything, how to process it, which way to do it, what's better, what's, all right, well, smoking it, we know that's not that really good. You know, go to Kentucky. But the thing with the processing with it is like, gee, I think this knowledge might have been out there for a long time. Maybe a couple of studies was happening, you know, besides sail building and spool, making the American flag out of the wonderful hemp plant. But then you were like, well, I had an epiphany.
Okay.
What, if you're going to try to extract the trichromes from your blower off your trimmer, mm-hmm. Why not have a little area in there? It's like Siberia. Drag the little suckers up, make them small. They fall into a little trough. I mean, this is the kind of studies that it was done on everything we could think about. And marijuana has been the one we've been hearing the biggest ding-dong bell ringing.
Yeah, I mean.
And so after, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say for the processing, if the plants are cold, like if you had a refrigerator truck, or if you needed it, say, but if you got those plants really, really cold before you apply them to any kind of a fan or even harvest them, they'll hold up a lot better.
Days at least, because we know the orange and yellow color that we see on our lovely little bees, but it's just that all that studying, remember, it was always one more. I'm not putting you down there, Mr. John. You are, this is awesome. But I just, all those things happened, I call it 517, my bad. But I just think that, you know, less is best. Sometimes we already know everything. It's just we got to get the right people in there. Stop nitpicking. I think 6 month cure is the bomb diggy de bong. But
so do I.
I'm an old guy. Thank you, K Mud.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your call, guy.
I know I'm getting right. Older because I like older weed all the time. But anyway, more and more I've been liking older weed. Okay.
Scott, would you care to respond to our caller?
I think you said it well.
Okay. Sweet. And, you know, like with a lot of our callers, we got a lot of passion out there, and I'm always, always pleased to hear it. But that's, in a way, that's the kind of business we're in. Javi, do we have another caller? Hi, you're in the studio.
Hey there.
Hey.
I had a question about the strain you guys were talking about earlier, the chicken and waffle.
Yeah, that's from the Humboldt Seed Company.
Yeah, I was wondering if he tried washing it, if it's a good washer, or if he only uses it for butane extract.
That's a great question.
I know there's some.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
I know there's some phenos that are, you know, are good washers of it.
Okay.
But not all the phenos washed well.
Right, so that means you're going to have to find, you're going to have to pheno hunt in there, and you may want to make your own, you know, keep crossing and making seeds of the ones that are good washers.
Yeah, keep on working the line.
Right, right. Okay.
All right. Well, then that sort of implies that you're really using the chicken and waffles for something else.
Or you just have to separate out the phenos when you're harvesting.
Okay.
Or you just got to wash more of it.
There you go.
Okay, sure. Okay. We've got another caller.
Oh, yeah, we
hey,
do.
You're
hey,
in,
welcome.
You're in the studio.
Is
Hi.
That me?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I was just going to mention, is it Nat from Humboldt Seeds?
That's right. Yep. That's right.
Yeah. He was on just a week ago or a couple weeks ago. And
yes.
He mentioned the chicken and waffles, and he said that was his nighttime smoke because it. He said it tested high or was real high THC. Anyways, that was interesting to hear about it helping sciatica too. And then you were talking about blueberry muffins, so it got me thinking, like wondering if you were associated with Humboldt Seed Company, and so that led me to basically that question I wanted to ask you is to maybe talk a little bit about either your own like seed production or if you're buying seed and if you're buying feminized seed or that kind of thing. So thanks for being there, and I know what you're talking about. Neyland definitely is in the fog belt, so maybe even how that affects your selection of strains. That would be interesting to hear just a bit.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Scott?
Yeah, so I get a lot of stuff from Nat over at the Humboldt Seed Company. I've been growing his blueberry muffin for years now. I don't even know how many years now. And I get seeds from him every year. I get some genetics here and there and clones, and you know, I've been crossing different things throughout the years too. So I have like my own line of things that I continue to grow and work on.
No, that's great. That's cool. What are you excited about this year in terms of what you've been working on?
I got some honey banana crosses, that I did last year.
Oh, yeah?
I'm excited about those ones because the honey banana was a great washer. I got those ones from Cha.
Shout out to was the Cannabis Horticultural Association, Russell, out there. I just saw him on Saturday. He's up there in Southern Oregon.
Yeah,
he's making it work.
Sweet.
Doing the thing, breeding the seeds out there. I got a few things from him last year that washed well. I got a Piss Coast Sour D that was a decent washer, and a Sour Trop Lime Sour, that washed.
Oh, okay. I think I got some seeds from him on Saturday. I'm like, he gave me something. I'm like, oh, wait, I think it is that Lime Sour. Yeah.
But I crossed a bunch of things with this Wilson Starfighter runt that I bred.
Interesting.
So I got all these different crosses from last year that I'm growing from regular seeds. Those are all regular seeds.
And that's why you got 50 different things going.
Yeah, and then I got a bunch of stuff from DNA Genetics. They gave me a bunch of seeds this year.
Oh,
so I got,
wow, that's amazing! Wow.
16 different things that I got from them, and then, I got probably 12 different, things from Nat.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the regular seeds that I bred last year.
So how big are your batches?
I've been running about 100, 120-pound, 140-pound batches.
Is that fresh?
Of the fresh frozen, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
A little bit less with the rosin. With the rosin, I've been doing 80, 90-pound batches.
Hmm. And do you do anything dry, or is it just all fresh?
I do all fresh.
Yeah, you like those fresh terps, but that's fine. People love those fresh terps.
I think they're the best.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I
agree with you.
I like mine a little bit more on the cured side, but there is something.
You're
lying
to yourself.
What's that?
I said you're lying to yourself.
No, I
maybe you haven't had really good fresh terps.
Well, I kind of think of it as there's the huffers and the puffers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the flavor is just, you know, just so good on the fresh frozen stuff.
Yeah, but it doesn't, it kind of burns, like, it doesn't burn as smooth. Like, it kind of, it can give me a wasabi hit or it makes me cough, but, like, I like a nice smooth, I mean.
Everything that we make is really, really smooth.
Okay. Well, that's great. How do you?
And when you're dabbing stuff, I don't know if you're dabbing or like smoking it on bowls or, you know, how you're consuming it. But when you're dabbing stuff, temperature is very important to have the proper temp on that. Or, you know, it can really make you cough or burn your throat or not be an enjoyable experience.
Right.
You know, the right temperature, you know, with some good hash, you know, it's going to be really smooth and enjoyable, and it's going to taste really good.
Sweet. I'm going to interrupt here again. Remind our listeners that they've got K Mudd's The Cannabis Show, and we're talking with Scott Harris from Earl.
It's just really cool talking to you, because one of the cool things is that you're like a single source operator, and that's really cool to like have that, where it's all estate grown. And so it's that.
Not a lot of us out there.
Yeah, exactly. And like just bringing that art and that craft from all the way through from your genetics, all the way through to your cultivation, and then into your extract. So yeah, that's pretty unique. It's cool.
Yeah, and I'm sure, Scott, it allows you to have a certain level of consistency that might be hard to achieve otherwise.
Yeah, it's not that easy to find, you know, good quality.
I mean, I'm like, I don't really do dabs, but now I'm sitting here going, next time you see me or something,
we'll make it enjoyable for you. We'll change your minds.
Yay, we'll try. No, those fresh terps are great. I'm definitely
I mean, it tastes and smells like the fresh flower. I mean,
well, what about like, you know,
it doesn't get any better than that.
But the aftertaste is usually fairly standard. Like when you get done, you just taste essential oils in your mouth. It's like kind of not, you know, anyway, doesn't really have like an after kind of.
We just released some vape carts this year too, and those are really delicious. Everybody's saying that, you know, they're probably the best vape cart in the market.
I believe you. Probably in the whole state. I believe you.
Have you gotten yourself a manufacturing license to do this?
He's set up down there in West End Road in the cannabis zone.
Okay.
We've been licensed since 2018.
Wow.
All right.
Oh, cool. We got a call.
Okay. Hey, you're in the studio.
Man, it's a dubba-dubba. I apologize. Wanted to say, Scott, I called you Mr. John. I apologize. Scott, you are obviously you're a connoisseur, you're a professional, and you're doing it. I've had a lot of chickens in my life, but none of them hated waffles. Not one of them. And so that's a world winner. But I was trying to make a point about the processing of marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the callers was kind of messing with the sun there, and I tell you what, the older, the better you leave the buds on the plant, take the big leaves off, but leave it on for 6 weeks, and then you try them, and then just do it with one or whatever. But I tell you what, sunshine, you know what I'm talking about.
Sometimes when
you cure it. Even for vaping and the volcano and stuff, there's a difference. It's actually old school alchemy, apparently.
Even though aside from like what you and I prefer, there's a different kind of effect in high on those fresh terps. And some people, like, that's their medicine, man. Like, they gotta have those fresh terps.
There's no stainless steel,
let's Scott wants to chime in.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, people are
flavor chasing. They want the next flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. We're conditioned for that. Well, I tell you what. When you're in the mud, sometimes you think you can't hear. Turns out you're getting the best thing you're ever, ever going to put in that sucker, or both of them. Hey, love you guys. And
thank you.
Just, you know, we don't need another study. Come on. What the hell's going on here, man?
Right on. Thanks All right. For your call.
My apologies. And
no worries,
I'll talk
man.
To you later.
Thank you. For calling
Thank
in.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Scott, here's something else. You know, I mentioned it. We talk about how it's important, especially with this challenged market, for people to diversify. And obviously getting into extraction is a way to do that. You've made a real success out of it. Do you think that the farmer has barriers to participation in this market? What do you think might hold a farmer back?
I would say probably freezer space. Yeah.
Freezer space, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Freezer space. And then
it takes a lot of space to freeze a lot of cannabis, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Is the freezer space pretty pricey? I can only imagine it is.
Well, yeah, especially if you're off-grid.
Yeah, if you're off-grid, it costs a lot, you know, to rent a generator. Even on the grid, you know, it costs almost $2,000 a month just to keep the freezer on.
Mm. Whoa.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what are your thoughts, too, about, like, it seems like at harvest, things do get a little crazy and this and that, as we know, but for extraction and for making high quality, there's really something to be said for gentle handling, not bruising the bud. What are your thoughts about that in your harvest operations?
Yeah, I mean, you want to be as gentle as you can, you know. At the same time, you also have a lot of stuff to cut down and, you know, maybe it's pouring rain and, you know, you need to get it cut down quick and do it really fast. So you gotta balance those things out.
Yeah, I think working at night when the buds are cold would really be ideal, even just going all night and taking advantage of the
just
cold.
All nighters every night for 6 weeks?
No, maybe not quite. Yeah. Maybe not quite like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I think it helps though over the cold, at least on the cold or on the hot days working at night.
It's definitely challenging to harvest when it's hot out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I could see that, especially since, you know, you're facing down wilt, you know,
And the resin, like, you don't want the resin to, like, pop open or bleed out depending on the strain and how much, you know, how greasy it is. If it doesn't really have, like, it's not, like, a more sandy, gritty resin, you could kind of risk.
We only cut down a little bit at a time, too, when it's
yeah.
You know, process what we can process really fast without.
Yeah,
you know,
6 weeks.
You know, going in the wilt.
Right. Well, that's
also try to cool our space down too. You know, put on some misters. You know, get the fans going. You know, to kind of just cool
and
down.
Then
totally. You know, humidify the space.
And then needing like some strains that finish earlier and finish later, because that 6 weeks is. I mean, it's kind of cool because then you could have, like, some things that are picked maybe slightly underripe and then some things that are picked a little overripe and then homogenize them and put them together, and then you get a nice spectrum of flavor there.
Well, with a six-week harvest, you're sort of – you don't really have any option, do you? You have to take a certain portion of your crop – underripe, and you have to take a certain portion overripe.
It's like a grape harvest.
Like a grape harvest, yeah. Is that so?
And I mean, there's a lot of variance in there. You know, I know for there's a lot of debate. You know, when it comes to washing hash and you know when you should harvest. You know, some people say you know milky heads. You know, some people want to do amber heads.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, I just harvest when I feel like, you know, it needs to be harvested.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing, like, full season outdoor. So, you know, it's just, I pretty much just start harvesting, you know, and just don't stop until it's all cut down.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. So would you think that the extract market is still a relatively small market?
It's niche. Yeah, it's definitely you know one of the smaller moving you know products you know in the retail market. You know, there's you know a lot more hash brands coming out. A lot more brands have hash now. A lot of rosin brands, but a lot of it out there, you know, isn't very good. You know, I hear you know store owners call me. You know, I had one call me just the other day and tell me that 90% of the stuff on the market tastes like leather.
Yes.
Wow.
There's a lot of really, you know, poor quality product out there.
All right. Well, there's nothing like no competition.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing myself.
Enjoy it. Well, you got it.
It makes it easy, you know, producing like a quality product competing with, you know, a bunch of garbage out there.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So,
times have changed.
Yeah, one of the I'm intrigued by this 90% is poor quality. I'm not that surprised. I think, and you'll have to tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's a certain art to what you do, and that has a lot to do with why generally the quality might be poor.
Well, caring is one.
Yeah.
I mean, from cultivation all the way through to the...
It all starts at the, you know, the cultivator side.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. That quality...
That's where the quality hash comes from. You know, that's where the poor quality hash is coming from, the cultivators that you know, don't care.
Yep.
You know, and they're just in it just to, you know, for how much flower they can pull per square foot.
Right.
That's the bottom line, you know. That's what matters.
And, you know, there is a tension, I feel, in the industry between what Sunshine and I would call craft growing and folks who know that people will buy it, even if it isn't top-notch. And I personally don't feel very comfortable about that. But I'm not an innocent. Back in the day, anything I had was going out the door, and I knew it was going to sell no matter what. Over time, I came to realize that simply wasn't going to cut it for me. So I'm real pleased to hear you're focusing on high quality. You know, that quality issue, that's part of the reason I'm sure that it's a niche market. Are you concerned?
It's always been quality over quantity for me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, And that's an advantage, honest, to your customers. We made it to the top of the hour anyway.
We might have another. Yeah, let's take this last caller.
Okay, if we can get him in.
Hey, welcome.
I keep it quick. We're at the top of the hour.
Hey, talk of the hour. I was just told to call in because my buddy Earl Hill was just on the air.
Hey.
Cool.
Oh, that sounds like Millie Mike Warren.
Oh, you thought wrong.
No, it's Bradley.
It's the other Bradley. Farm. Yeah, yeah. Hey.
That's Bradley, one of...
What are we talking about live on K-Mud today?
Hash.
And I love hash.
Hash. Yes, Brad loves hash.
What are you smoking on right now?
I'm smoking on this blueberry muffin vape cart, which is delicious.
Oh, wow. I think I was just smoking that one yesterday.
You were.
You know, I've got quite a lineup that I'm working with right now, you know. I think my favorite being the Wilson Starfighter Runts, you know. I think of that one just really packs a punch. The terpenes are unreal, and dude, it just gets me right where I need to be every time.
And that was the mail that we used for all of our stuff last year, all of our crosses.
Sweet.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, we really are at the top of the hour. We're going to have to let you go. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Bradley.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Yes, sir.
Right on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Scott, do you have any closing remarks? Perhaps how can people get in touch with you or your product?
Yeah. Where can it be found locally?
Locally, you know, I think we could be found at Proper Wellness Dispensary, Kiss Canoe Dispensary, Paradise Dispensary, and I hope I'm not leaving anybody else. Oh, okay. EcoCan, definitely EcoCan Dispensary, and probably maybe a couple more. The Gondry. I can't forget about the Gondry.
Awesome. Okay,
definitely
great.
At the Gondry in McKinleyville.
Cool.
Sure.
Cool.
And then you can go to EarlHill.com. And that we have a terp finding map on there, and you can see anywhere in the state where you can find our product at. If you go to EarlHill.com, you can also get a hold of us on EarlHill.com or find us on Instagram at EarlHill.
Okay, and that's E-R-R-L, right?
That is correct.
Earl.
E-R-R-L-H-I-L-L.
Right. Okay, great. Well,
all right.
Yeah. Wow, it's been really nice speaking with you this evening, and have a great season.
Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's been actually quite delightful.
It's been wonderful.
I can tell, too, that our listeners were very interested,
and
that's a good thing. Thank you.
About hash all day.
Yeah, thank you for being our guest.
The truth is in the hash.
You have a good night.
Thank you, guys.
Right on, you too.
Yep. So you have been listening to KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarah Seda. We've been real pleased to have Scott Harris from Earl Hill Farm Extraction with us and talking all about hash. And I don't think many are going to argue hash is a favorite. Next week, our guest is, and we are excited, it's The Blacklist.
They're coming to the studio.
They're coming into the studio. They have a very, very popular Instagram.
Million followers. It'll be fun. It'll be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Well-known podcasty kind of thing.
I'll have The Blacklist, too, on Sunday at the Ganja Tree Show.
Yeah, no, they're cool. Too. I went and took a look at The Blacklist XYX, and I feel like they're a perfect match for this show and for Humboldt, because they definitely think outside the box. That was the impression I had.
Stay tuned, everyone.
Listen in. Call in.
Have a good week.
Uh-huh. Night.
This has been a KMUG podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.